では、これから英語の試験を行います。英語の試験は、はじめにリスニング、次にリーディングの順序で行います。リーディングの指示は、リスニングが終わった後で行います。試験に関する指示は、すべて録音された音声によって行いますので、ページの開閉も音声の指示に従ってください。これからリスニングの指示を読みますので、問題冊子の表紙を見ながら注意して聞いてください。1、リスニングにはパート1、2、3の3つがあります。2、各パートが始まる前に日本語で説明をします。注意して聞いてください。3、問題冊子には問いと4つの選択肢が与えられています。その中から最も適当と思われる答えを1つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。4、各パートが終わったら、音声による指示があるまで、他のページを開けないで待っていてください。5、パート1では10の短い会話を聞きます。それぞれの会話についての問いに答えてください。6、パート2ではパート1より長い会話を2つ聞きます。それぞれの会話についての問いに答えてください。7、パート3では講義を3つ聞きます。講義の内容についてそれぞれ5つの問いに答えてください。8、会話や講義を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。回答カードのマークの仕方は1ページに書かれています。では、1ページを開けて確認してください。それでは、これから試験を始めます。パート1では、10の短い会話を聞きます。会話を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。それぞれの会話についての問いに答えてください。問題冊子に書かれている問いを読み、最も適当と思われる答えを1つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。10番の回答が終わっても、指示があるまで次のページを開けないで待っていてください。では、2ページを開けてください。
Now, let's begin. 1.
Excuse me, is this seat taken?
Yeah, sorry. My friend is just getting her meal.
Okay. It's so difficult to find a seat today.
Yeah, no one is eating outside. It looks like it'll rain any minute.
2.
Oh no! I left my laptop computer in my dorm room. Do you think I have time to go back and get it before class starts?
I don't know, Shohei. I think Professor Tanaka is coming in like 5 minutes. Why don't you talk to her and ask if you can run back to the dorm?
Yeah, I guess that's better than rushing to the dorm now and being late.
Exactly. She may even say that we don't need a laptop today.
3.
Excuse me, Professor. I have a question about the vocabulary test next week. Is it a multiple choice test or a writing test?
Well, if you look at the handout from the last class, you can find that information.
Oh, really? Sorry, I haven't read it very carefully.
Yeah, you should check the handout more thoroughly.
4.
Hey Naomi, how was the soccer game? It was last Sunday, right?
Yeah, it was great. Our team won 3-2. We might win the tournament for the first time since 2015.
Nice! Good luck! When is the final? I really want to come.
Yeah, you should come to see me score. It's October 21st, next Saturday. Don't forget!
Five.
Have you started job hunting yet, Kenta?
Kind of. I still don't know what I want to do yet. But I've talked about job hunting with some of my friends who are working.
That's great. What kind of work do they do? What did you ask them about?
They all do different kinds of jobs, from media to finance. I asked them about the actual work they do, but I also asked a lot about the work culture. I want to work at a place where they have remote working opportunities, flexible working hours, childcare leave programs, things like that.
Six.
How was your weekend, Tom?
It was good, Ayako. I didn't have any homework to do, so I went to the beach with my family. How about you?
Oh, I didn't go anywhere because I had to finish my paper. But I watched a movie with my roommate after the paper was done.
That sounds nice. Living with my family has its pluses, but living in a dorm must be a lot more fun.
Seven.
Hi, is this the classroom for politics and the environment?
Yes, do you want to sit here? Nice to meet you. I'm Jody.
Hi, I'm Yuta. Are you a politics major?
Actually, I'm a second year student, so I haven't decided on my major, but I'm interested in international politics.
Oh yeah? I'm a third year student majoring in politics, so if you have any questions about the process of selecting a major, please feel free to ask me.
Eight.
Professor Foster, I'd like to discuss my essay with you. Do you have time now?
Okay, May. You're writing about gun control, right?
Yes, I'm trying to explain the reasons why the U.S. should strictly control guns.
Interesting. Are you also writing a counter-argument? I mean, the opposite side of the argument. In this case, are you introducing the idea that strict gun control doesn't work?
Well, that is actually what I wanted to ask you about. I wonder if it is necessary to write a counter-argument because my essay is already close to the word limit.
Nine.
Hi, we're interested in starting a new swimming club. Is this where we can get an application form for that?
Yes. You can fill out the form here. You can start an official club as long as you have a minimum of 5 students.
Okay, great. I think we can manage that.
For swimming clubs, you need to make a reservation in advance here or on our website. Then you can use the pool for 1 hour. But because there is no lifeguard, you must have at least 3 members in the pool at any time.
Got it. Can we get an application form?
Ten.
Hi, Brad. Have you decided on your presentation topic yet?
No. I just have a general idea, but I haven't narrowed it down.
What's your idea?
I really want to make a presentation about the war in Ukraine, but I can't decide on a focus. I could argue from a historical perspective, an economic perspective, or an educational perspective.
An educational perspective sounds very interesting. You could discuss how the war has affected children and their education.
Yeah. I thought an economic perspective was good too, but you're right. I can talk about the injustice of the war by focusing on children.
パート2では、パート1より長い会話を2つ聞きます。 会話を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。それぞれの会話について問題冊子に書かれている問いを読み、 最も適当と思われる答えを一つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。15番の回答が終わっても、指示があるまで、次のページを開けないで待っていてください。では、4ページを開けてください。
Questions 11 to 12. Aya and James are talking about an open lecture.
Hi, James. Do you have time now?
Hi, Aya. What's up?
Well, I'm going to an open lecture about English teaching. I thought you might be interested in the talk since you recently started teaching English as a volunteer at the local community center in Mitaka. Do you want to come?
What's the title of the lecture?
It's Insights from Online Cross-Cultural Exchange.
Sounds interesting. Who's the speaker?
He's a professor at another university. He is well known in the field of English language teaching. I read about one of his projects in a course I'm taking, Methods of Teaching English.
Okay.
In the project, a Japanese high school class and an Indonesian high school class were connected online. The students at both schools interacted with each other in English.
Wow, that sounds like fun. It's a very positive way of having online classes.
Exactly. They got into small groups and asked each other questions. They also had presentations about their countries and schools. He said sometimes they had connection troubles or noise issues, but overall, students enjoyed talking in English and learning about a foreign culture.
I'd like to know more about this project. Maybe I can think about connecting my students here with students in other countries. I have a friend who teaches English in Korea.
Sounds great. Okay then, let's go. The lecture starts in 15 minutes.
Questions 13 to 15. Ken and Shoko are talking about the writing support desk.
Hi, Shoko. How are you?
Hi, Ken. I'm okay. A bit sleepy, though.
Why? Did you stay up late?
Yeah, you know, today is the deadline for the essay outline. I had to think about the structure of my essay. It took such a long time. How about you? Didn't you have to work late into the night?
No, I submitted the outline yesterday.
What? How did you manage to do that?
Oh, I got some help at the writing support desk last week.
The writing support desk? Oh yeah, I remember their orientation. We can discuss our papers and essays with a tutor, right?
Yes, they're undergraduate or graduate students, so they're easier to talk to than our professors. You know, in order to make an outline, you have to think about the logic of your arguments.
I know, that's the hardest part.
Yes, in the tutorial I had, a tutor posed some questions for me to think about. Answering her questions made me organize what I really wanted to say more clearly. Then the tutor helped me find the most logical structure to convey my main argument.
Maybe I'll give it a try. Do they help us in later stages of writing too? I finished the outline for this essay, but I might want to have their tutorial after I start writing. I always have trouble connecting paragraphs logically in my essay.
You can have a session at any stage of writing. They don't correct your English mistakes, but they can check the logical flow of your writing. Sometimes it's difficult to make a reservation, though, especially towards the end of the term. I heard that Tuesday and Friday mornings are relatively easy to book.
Having a tutorial in the morning might help me avoid staying up late.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I also got some useful tips about time management from the tutor. Their advice is very helpful because it's based on experience.
問題冊子はそのままにして、パート3についての説明を聞いてください。パート3では3つの講義を聞きます。講義を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。それぞれの講義終了後に90秒の回答時間が与えられます。講義について問題冊子に書かれている5つの問いを読み、最も適当と思われる答えを1つ選んで、回答カードの相当欄をマークしてください。では、6ページを開けて1つ目の講義を聞いてください。
Questions 16 to 20. Listen to the lecture about a writer, Ernest Hemingway.
In the early 20th century, many artists from around the world gathered in Paris. The French capital became a cultural melting pot as painters, writers, composers, and other artists influenced each other and applied techniques of other art forms to their own works. Ernest Hemingway was one of them. Did you know he used to live in Paris? Young Hemingway lived there from 1921 to 1928. His mentor in Paris was Gertrude Stein, an American writer and art collector. With her help, Hemingway learned from many painters by interacting with them or by studying their works in museums. In this lecture, I'd like to spotlight the influence of Paul Cézanne, the father of modern art, on Hemingway. Although they never met in person, many scholars of literature state that Cézanne had a decisive impact on Hemingway, who later became one of the greatest writers in the U.S. Now, how did Cézanne influence Hemingway? Researchers have found several aspects, but today let me focus on the depiction of landscapes. Cézanne's lifelong subject was the mountains of southern France, but his paintings were often criticized for depicting the mountains as too large. Why did he depict the mountains that way? It's because he tried to reproduce on canvas the landscape as perceived by humans, rather than using the traditional perspective method. The perspective method, established during the Renaissance, is a technique developed to reproduce the view of this world in three dimensions on a flat canvas. However, although the perspective method produces objectively accurate representations, these representations are not always aesthetically satisfying because distant objects appear oddly small. You may have experienced this when taking a picture of a majestic mountain, only to find it looks disappointingly small in the photograph. But Cézanne didn't paint landscapes in this traditional way. Rather, he painted mountains as he perceived them. That's why his mountains look so large. And that's how the audience of his paintings can experience the magnificence of the mountains through the artist's perception. Well, you may wonder how Cézanne's way of depicting the landscape can be applied to writing. You can see it in Hemingway's short story, Big Two-Hearted River. The story is simple. The main character, Nick, comes to a place near a river, puts up a tent, and the next morning goes trout fishing. In this uneventful story, Hemingway depicted an American landscape through the perceptions of Nick by repeatedly using words of vision such as look or see. Readers should be able to experience the landscape by sharing Nick's visual sensations, just as the viewers of Cézanne's paintings can experience the landscape by sharing his visual sensations. Now, let me read an excerpt from Big Two-Hearted River. There was nothing but the pine plain ahead of him, until the far blue hills that marked the lake's superior height of land. He could hardly see them, faint and far away in the heat light over the plain. If he looked too steadily, they were gone. But if he only half looked, they were there, the far-off hills of the height of land. To this persistent visual description, as the story progresses, the senses of smell, touch, and taste are added. This work was criticized for lacking a clear storyline and human interest. Hemingway responded to this by saying that those who criticized it read it in an ordinary way and did not try to consider what he was trying to write. The story was deliberately plotless. It seems Hemingway wanted his readers to sense the American landscape through Nick's perceptions, just as the audience of Cézanne's paintings can sense the view of the French mountains through his perception. Today we looked at Cézanne's influence on Hemingway in the depiction of landscapes. Before we close, let me introduce what he said about Cézanne. I learned how to make a landscape for Mr. Paul Cézanne by walking through the Luxembourg Museum 1,000 times with an empty gut. And I am pretty sure that if Mr. Paul was around, he would like the way I make them and be happy that I learned it from him. Both Cézanne's paintings and Hemingway's works make it possible for us to experience the landscape that they wanted us to see. Next week, let's look at some other passages from Hemingway that highlight what I just described.
では、16番から20番までの問いに答えてください。回答時間は90秒です。では、8ページに進んで、2つ目の講義を聞いてください。
Questions 21 to 25. Listen to the lecture about insects.
Today, I'm going to talk about a crisis that is developing in the world of insects. One scientist who was concerned about this was Anders Pape Müller. Every summer, for about 20 years,He spent several weeks driving his car at the same speed up and down the same roads in the Danish countryside. It must have been a strange sight for the local farmers, but he was actually conducting an experiment by counting the number of dead insects on his car's windscreen. The results showed that from 1997 to 2021, there had been an 80% reduction of splattered bugs. A similar study in the UK,from 2004 to 2019, found that the number of flying insects fell by 60%. Other recent studies have shown a 75% decrease in flying insects in German nature reserves and a 98% reduction in ground insects in a Puerto Rican rainforest. In fact, research has indicated that 40% of insect species globally are threatened with extinction. And while some insects are doing okay,or even increasing in numbers, especially freshwater insects, experts agree that the overall trend is significantly downwards to the extent that the phenomenon has been labelled the insect apocalypse. Now, to understand the catastrophic consequences of this insect apocalypse for the environment and us humans, we have to consider the many roles insects play in maintaining nature's ecosystems. For instance,Insects nourish soil by recycling organic matter. They are also a vital link in the food chain. As the number of insects has been decreasing in many areas, so has the number of birds, fish, and amphibians such as frogs that feed on them. Furthermore, as many of you know, they play a critical role as plant pollinators. As insects move from plant to plant searching for food, they transfer pollen, which helps create seeds for the next generation. Most flowering plants and many of the world's food crops rely on pollinators, and insects commonly provide this service. This means that the reduction in insect numbers is also causing concerns regarding food security. Many insect-pollinated fruits and vegetables, for example, will be hard to grow in a world with fewer insects. What's more, this is happening when the human population and demand for food are increasing. As you can see, insects are incredibly important for life on Earth. So why is this crisis happening? The biggest threat to insect populations is habitat loss due to both the expansion and intensification of agriculture. Firstly, the expansion of agriculture means that the total amount of land used to grow crops is increasing. It results in habitat loss for insects as more natural land, where they thrive, is converted to agricultural land. And secondly, the intensification of agriculture. This means that we are trying to increase the amount of food that can be produced from a given area of land. To achieve this, small fields typically used for a variety of crops are combined to create enormous fields for single crop use. This process results in borders around the smaller fields being removed, and this is problematic for insects as these borders are often made up of trees, hedges, wildflowers, and weeds that act as insect habitats. Another problem of agricultural intensification is that it increases the use of chemical fertilizers and insecticides, making the land less habitable to insects. So, what about solutions? Many people are calling for governments to boost insect habitats by committing to nature protection and recovery programs that will increase the size and number of both rural and urban green spaces. However, we can help as individuals too. In our own gardens, we can reduce pesticide use and create insect habitats by allowing grass to grow longer and planting wildflowers. Although we may find some insects very annoying, it would be extremely difficult for us to live without these tiny creatures that do so much to support life on Earth.
では、21番から25番までの問いに答えてください。回答時間は90秒です。では、10ページに進んで3つ目の講義を聞いてください。
Questions 26 to 30. Listen to the lecture about maps.
With advances in technology and digital tools, maps have become increasingly present and more accessible in our everyday lives. I'm sure many of you use Google Maps on an almost daily basis. I have no doubt that you can use it to find your way around better than I can. But when we look at a map, we sometimes forget that maps are selective and incomplete, and sometimes even deceptive. Marc Momoyer, a professor of geography and author of How to Lie with Maps, argues that maps must distort reality if they are to be readable and understandable. What he means is that a map needs to simplify, falsify, or conceal the realities of a 3D world in a 2D map. Today, I would like to briefly describe a few examples of some of the ways that maps distort reality and how we can look at maps more critically. Let's think for a moment. How does one flatten a globe and display it on something flat, like a smartphone? To do this, mapmakers use projection, a method which translates a sphere into a two-dimensional representation. There are various ways to project space. Many projections are chosen based on the overall function of the map and the property that the mapmaker wishes to preserve. For example, the Mercator projection is primarily used for navigation because it enables a navigator to plot a straight line course. The major weakness of this projection is that it does not project area accurately. This is apparent when looking at Greenland and Africa on the map. They look the same size, don't they? But in reality, Greenland has only 7% of the land area of Africa. With this projection, countries near the North and South Poles appear much bigger than they should be relative to countries near the equator. In the 1970s, Dr. Arno Peters argued that this weakness of the Mercator projection is problematic because it encourages a biased perception of the world. He explained that the Mercator projection shows countries in the Northern Hemisphere much larger than those in the Southern Hemisphere, which tend to be closer to the equator. He offered an alternative, the Peters projection, which looks a little odd as it distorts the shapes of countries, but it reflects their true areas in relation to each other. Let's see. Another way that maps distort reality is through the use of areas, lines, or points. Maps covering small areas can include more realistic details, but maps covering larger geographic areas include less detail. For example, Baltimore, despite being a major city, is not included on some maps of the United States because of space constraints and cluttering. Do you know where Baltimore is? It is unfortunately located between larger urban areas like Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. While this example shows how mapmakers are limited in what can be put on a map, some maps, particularly ones used for advertising or political purposes, often present misleading information to influence the public. They often show a product or service or political agenda in a favorable light. You know, maps produced in non-communist countries during the Cold War are a good example of this. They often enhanced the size of the Soviet Union, which magnified the threat of communism, and also used strong, bright colors to depict communist regions as expansionist and menacing, while neutral tones were used to represent non-communist regions as small and vulnerable. In the case of newspapers and magazines, careful readers tend to question the facts presented, but I wonder if we still apply the same critical eye to maps. If particular details are omitted or other information is exaggerated, we must ask ourselves, why is the map maker choosing to depict reality in this way? Perhaps the answer to this question will help us understand where we really are.
では、26番から30番までの問いに答えてください。回答時間は90秒です。 鉛筆を置いてください。これでリスニングは終わりです。引き続きリーディングに進みます。